Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to another exciting adventure right here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm your host. Wait a second, what's the name of the show? It's Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, yeah.
I'm your host of Radio Wasteland, Chauncey Allworth, and this is my co-host of Radio Wasteland, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today on Radio Wasteland?
Oh, is that what we're calling it now? Okay. But yes, I do. So New York City is showing an increase in UFO sightings this year, with 184 sightings so far this year compared to 151 total for the entire year last year. So one individual reported being physically assaulted by a craft using some sort of ray. Quote, I felt this heat-like feeling going through my body, they reported, starting at my head like some sort of radiation, burning me, like frying me, and that's when I realized it was the craft. Freaky stuff. A tourist in Scotland taking pictures off Shannonry Point, not quite sure how you say that, has captured photos which he believes are evidence that the Loch Ness Monster has found a new home. The photos were captured when he was taking pictures of swimmers in the water. He claims he did not notice the protruding head of the creature until later. The images are compelling, or at least as compelling as any other photo of the Loch Ness Monster, which is to say it's a grainy photo of a curved object rising from the water that kind of looks like a reptile head. Experts warn that the increasing availability of user-facing deepfake apps, such as the app ReFace, could in time spawn a misinformation crisis. While the technology has existed to create convincing user-generated videos of real people for years, experts warn that this technology has now become accessible to the average person. The ReFace app has already been downloaded more than 42 million times. Nina Schick, author of a book titled Deepfakes, The Upcoming Infopocalypse, worries that the ethical and moral considerations behind this technology may be, quote, three steps behind the business development. However, so far, ReFace has shared information with companies like Facebook so they can build deepfake detection tools. And finally, the mystery of sudden elephant deaths in Botswana earlier this year appears to have been solved. Nearly 330 elephants were found dead due to unclear causes. Scientists now believe the death was not due to poaching or poisoning, but due to toxic blooms of cyanobacteria as a result of the warming climate. Cyanobacteria is a blue-green algae and naturally occurring neurotoxin, which now blooms more frequently in water sources due to climate change. Tests revealed that the elephants drank algae-poisoned water and died as a result. Other animal species do not appear affected by the algae. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right, New York sightings. Okay, this makes me think of two things. Two very obnoxious things.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise. One is that apparently to the long list of coronavirus symptoms, we can add UFO sightings.
You mean like UFO hallucinations?
Yeah.
I guess that it might have not been a heat ray, but a fever, as his brain imagined a craft frying him with a ray.
And then the other is that the heat laser, there has to be some sort of crowd control Trump joke in there somewhere. I just haven't put it together.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point, because it didn't occur to me when I was putting together this news that heat rays are actually like a thing that exists now and not science fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so
I saw a reporter get hit by one. Have you ever seen this video?
I've never seen it used. I've heard it's agonizing.
But. Yeah, so there's this reporter and they're testing it on him and he's all, okay, so they're about to turn it on and he's watching. He's all right, go. And he's all, 1,000, 2,000, and then he like takes off running after like 2 seconds because it just burns, you know? And it's wild.
But. Yeah, it's terrifying. Especially since this stuff just gets used on peaceful protesters all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, dang, there's a crowd. Better burn them.
Yeah, and I got to put this out there anyway. Even if they aren't peaceful protesters, because I know a lot of people listening are going like, what, they're rioters. Even if they are rioters, you probably still shouldn't use a heat laser ray on your own people.
Yeah, well,
That's just kind of like, you know, free country 101. You know, I understand you got to reel it in and some bad things are going to happen, but, you know, using untested laser technology on your own people, that's a little weird. That's a little weird.
I mean, I think it is tested. And to be fair, I don't know that it's that much worse than tear gas, but like.
It is tested and the military decided not to use it. So it's.
Oh,
not,
really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the military doesn't use it. Yeah.
Well, the military can't use tear gas either. Because it's a chemical weapon.
But realistically, okay, so getting back to the topic at hand.
Which is UFOs.
New York UFO sightings, you know, this is, you know, half of one would say, of course, they're home more, you know,
sure. Yeah.
Because of coronavirus and all this stuff. They're home, they're on their porches, they're having beers, looking at the sun. The moon.
Like, is that what people do?
You get my point. They're looking up, they're home more. The other flip side of that for me, though, is light pollution.
Yeah.
Is this New York State or New York City?
No, it's New York City.
Wow. Huh. Because with light pollution, you wouldn't be able to see very
much.
Yeah,
you wouldn't think it would be really a hot spot for sightings, but UFO, again, just means unidentified flying object. And I imagine there's a lot of, like,
drone activity and
yeah, drones, just air traffic, just misidentified stuff.
Deep fake misinformation crisis from Reface. Again, this brings me back to the Fugazi lyric, which I'm sure was taken from something else. It doesn't matter what you're selling, it's what you're buying. The misinformation crisis is a crisis. The crisis is not the misinformation that people are putting out, it's how stupid people are to take it all in.
I completely agree.
And yes, there is a massive, massive crisis.
You know, I used to think this was a problem, but then COVID came out and I'm like, and I realized it's not going to change anything. There's like fake videos and stuff that look real going around because people don't need the videos to be convincing fakes to believe them. They will choose to believe or disbelieve, you know, whatever they want.
Yeah. Haven't they seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2? I mean, Kurt Russell is not a young man, yet they made him a young man. I mean, surely we've, you know, literally 80% of adults in this country have probably seen some sort of aging technology that they was jaw-dropping to them in a movie that they saw.
Yeah, well, the difference here is that, like, it used to be that, you know, this was stuff that would take, like, an expert weeks to do. Now it's stuff that takes some dude 20 minutes to do.
Yeah, I just...
You're right. I don't think the deep fakes are what's going to change things. I think our continuing crisis in terms of just having really bad education and information literacy is the crisis.
I think people need to stop being such hypocrites. They're all about, like, their themselves, their own freedom, taking control of all this stuff, yet they do nothing to make themselves smarter or more educated. They just process out a bunch of crap and spit it back out as though they learned something. You know, if you're going to be all cocky and basically act like you know everything, you got to get out there and know everything. Here's the rule. If you start any sentence with technically or actually, you damn well better be right or you're a jackass.
Well, yeah. let's do a complete overhaul of human nature and get back to all of us on that.
Well, I think we're working on it. Yeah, and finally, sudden elephant deaths. I hadn't heard of this.
That's sad.
But they're dying from toxic blooms of bacteria due to global warming.
And yeah.
The only thing I have really to say about this is, must be embarrassing to die from something that doesn't exist.
Dang. I feel vaguely owned now. You owned me.
All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland. Tonight our guest is Hep Aldridge, and we're talking about something we've never talked about before, and I gotta say, we both latched onto this topic immediately.
Yeah.
We're talking about sunken treasure and treasure hunting and lost cities.
That's a good
absolutely
one.
Cool. This guy's the real deal. He really did this stuff, and it is really interesting. Especially, it's weird, the politics of treasure hunting.
Yeah, not like national politics, but like, you know, back room, I scratch your back, you scratch my politics.
Yeah.
Like, it's freaky stuff.
Yeah, it's weird, weird stuff. All right, so stick around. Hep Aldridge coming up here on Radio Wasteland.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Our guest tonight is Hep Aldridge. He's a certified scuba diver, cave diver, and amateur archaeologist whose main area of interest is pre-Columbian cultures of the America. He has led or been part of archaeological expeditions to Mexico and Honduras, making discoveries that have been reported in National Geographic. That is some real stuff. Hep, thanks for being on Radio Wasteland.
My pleasure.
So, you know, my first thing that leads here is I think a lot of us want to eventually know, like, oh, did you see something amazing down there? But, you know, the first question that pops to mind to me is, what led to what? Was it an interest in this pre-Columbian stuff that led you to do the scuba diving, or was it scuba diving that led you to this stuff?
that's a question that's going to take a little time.
We got an hour. get it done in an hour.
Okay. But I'll try and keep it succinct.
Yeah.
I started getting interested in pre-Columbian cultures when I lived in New Mexico. My father was with NASA, and he was working on the Apollo program in the early days, and they were testing the launch escape system at White Sands Missile Range. And we moved from East Texas to Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I spent my junior and senior year in high school out there. While I was there, and I've always been interested in treasure. I mean, what guy or gal isn't interested in hidden treasure or buried treasure or stolen treasure or, you know, whatever. And, of course, the Southwest is just full of all kinds of stories about bank robberies and train robberies and money and gold that's been hidden by the robbers because they couldn't get away with it and they never came back for it. So that kind of got my interest in the treasure aspect. While I was living in New Mexico, Las Cruces is only 45 miles north of El Paso, and it's on basically what has been for many hundreds of years a direct route out of Mexico. I started hearing about legends of treasure being taken out of Mexico by the Aztecs. You know, Montezuma's treasure before the conquistadors could get to it. And I was like,
interesting.
I've never heard of the Aztecs to speak of. So I started doing some research. The treasure is what caught my interest. And I started doing some research and I learned a fair amount about the Aztecs and the fact that they were an indigenous culture down there and quite large. And they were a very rich culture. Lots of gold, lots of silver, all the kinds of things that a person that might be interested in treasure would want to know about. And then I learned about the ransom of Montezuma and the fact that the natives or the Aztec people had spirited out a lot of his treasure before giving it to him because he was killed prior to, you know, the treasure being delivered. And it just so happens that stories that I heard out there had them coming right through my area, right through Las Cruces, going through across the Oregon Mountains, which are just to the north, and then further up into the Four Corners area of the Southwest. So that really got my interest. The fact that they had a lot of treasure and the fact that they came through my area, I started doing more research about it. And that's when I realized that the Aztecs were only one small segment of the population in Mexico and Central America. And I learned about the Maya, the Olmec, the Toltec, Zapotec, Mixtec. I mean, there's a whole range of civilizations down there or groups down there that all made up this whole area of Central America and Mexico. And they all had your unique things about them. And one of the things that really started getting me even more interested is when I started seeing the architecture and the building and what they had done. Because you have to remember that all of them were a Neolithic culture, which means they were New Stone Age. They didn't have metal tools to speak of. The Maya didn't. They didn't have the wheel. And they didn't have beasts of burden. So basically, they built cities like Tikal and Chichen Itza and Calakmul, you know, fantastic cities without metal tools, you know. And I was like, how could they do that? Because they're still standing.
Right.
So that really then got me interested in the archaeology part of things. And I continued my reading and my research, and really fell in love with it. When I was, my last duty station assigned when I was in the military at Homestead Air Force Base. And that's when I started hearing about the sunken ships off the coast of Florida that were Spanish fleets that were bringing treasure from South America, Central America, bringing up the coast of Florida and then turning and heading for Spain, and the number of ships that had wrecked and the amount of treasure that supposedly was on them. That got me all excited about that. And I got certified, back in 1969 while I was down at Homestead and spent some next 2 years diving some in the Keys and meeting some extraordinary, people, treasure hunters. Basically the icons of treasure hunting on on the east coast of the United States anyway.
So, you know, what is the ratio of, I'm curious as to people's motivations into getting into treasure hunting. You know, one of them, of course, is I'm going to get rich. You know, the other is I'm just sort of really interested in the research, and this is sort of a fun way to spend my time. You know, what is the ratio of treasure hunter to treasures actually discovered? I mean, is there a fair amount of treasure actually being discovered?
Yes, actually there is, and that's directly related to modern technology.
Interesting.
As diving technology has improved and more tools are available to those that are doing the underwater research, whether it's magnetometers, metal detectors, you know, a number of things, more is being found. But for instance, and I'm going into shameless self-promotion, the book that
That's
I wrote.
What we're all about. Don't worry about it.
the book that,
was
that I
the,
wrote.
The first, you know, proposed name for the show was Shameless Self-Promotion, but then Chauncey was like, well, about Radio Wasteland. So.
I like them both.
It's in the spirit of the,
there you go.
Of the thing.
I delve into a treasure fleet that was lost off the coast of Florida here in 1715. Mm-hmm. There were 11 ships that were part of it that left Havana. And when the fleets would come from South America, Central America, to head back to Spain, they follow the coast of Florida up actually north, probably somewhere in South Carolina, before they would hang a hard right and head towards Europe. One of the things that they were always told, which I learned, I did not know, is that when they were coming up the coast of Florida, they should always keep the coast in view. So they always had to be within eyesight of the coast of Florida. That's pretty darn close. And the 1715 fleet was made up of 11 ships. Well, on the night of July 30th, 1715, a hurricane was brewing in the Caribbean, moving this way. And about 2 a.m. on the July 31st, it hit. And out of the 11 ships, 10 were sunk. So a hurricane was coming from the southeast, and ships were traveling up the coast of Florida within sight of land. So you have to understand that they got blown aground in pretty shallow water. And I would say probably in the past 5 to 10 years, significant treasure is being found along the coast of Florida in 20 feet of water or less.
Wow.
So that kind of talks about the treasure and where it's at. Now, finding it and making a living off of it, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Right.
Because in the state of Florida, we get into some really interesting political implications to it, if you will.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drought. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally, the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best-tasting water on the planet. Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Since 1890, Stifel has established itself as one of the nation's leading wealth management and investment banking firms by understanding clients' hopes and dreams, focusing on building and preserving wealth. Simply put, when you achieve your goals, we achieve ours. I'm proud to be a part of Stifel as a financial advisor. This is Susan Eastman, First Vice President Investments. Call today for quality time well spent. 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Fentanyl poisoning is a growing problem in our community, but we can help do something about it. Join us September 18th at 1 p.m. at the Riverfront Park Amphitheater for the Decennium Giving Circle to celebrate a beautiful heart taken from our community entirely too soon. The concert is free, but there will be a raffle with prizes donated by local businesses and artists. So come on down, because we can all make a difference.
Listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. You are listening to Hep Aldridge here on Radio Wasteland as we discuss Sunken Treasure and Lost Cities.
That's what I was wondering. It's like, what's the law say about that? Is there a point in time where ancient discoveries become public domain, for lack of a better word, where
no.
or do you own it when you find it? Like, oh, these are my doubloons now. You know, it's you know, how does that work? I mean, is there no government claim to it, or
in the state of Florida?
So it's different from state to state.
No, the state waters are 3 miles offshore. Mm-hmm. The territorial waters then go from 3 miles to 12 miles. And then you get into international waters. If you find anything within the 3 mile limit off the state of, off the coast, 20% of what you find automatically goes to the state. Okay? That's right off the top. They get the pick of whatever it is. Now, here's the kicker, and one of the things that I address in the book, which I just really, it kind of sticks in my craw, and there are a lot of people out there that will not agree with me, which is fine. The waters, the ocean, the bottom, was leased by the state of Florida to private individuals who are now charging treasure hunters to work portions of the bottom of the ocean. And so you have to pay, the last time I checked it was somewhere around $2,500 a season to work a section of the bottom where you think there might be treasure.
Really?
And that's the key, where there might be treasure.
So let me throw this out there. So Florida has taken their 3 miles of underwater coast expanse, and they have leased it out to individuals. So now these people are paying Florida for the right to charge other people.
Right.
That's basically.
But here's the kicker.
I don't even see how that's allowed, but sorry.
I know. Well, it's like I said, it kind of sticks in my craw.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the kicker. It's primarily leased to one person.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, that person was Mel Fisher. And I think most people would remember the name of, he actually started out in California, teaching scuba diving. And he was brought to Florida by a group that I almost had the opportunity to dive for, which was the Real 8 Corporation. And they were located down, here in Cape Canaveral for a while, but then also down in the Sebastian area. And, the person who started the company was Kip Wagner, and he was a construction man. And he started finding real silver coins up and down the beachcombing back in the late 50s, mid to late 50s. And he realized after throwing some back in the water and watching them skip across the top that that was silver, that was treasure. And so he started a company, and it was called Real 8. And he and about six or seven other individuals went together to form this company. They realized that they needed some additional help, and they were looking. I'm not exactly sure how Mel Fisher came into it, but somehow they knew of Mel, who had a dive shop out in California. And they talked him into moving to Florida and becoming part of Real 8, which he did, but then broke away in, from what I understand, not too pleasant terms, and went on his own, and then went on down to work the Keys and discover the Atosha, which is one of the largest treasures that's been found off the coast of Florida. But he worked a deal and got a lease from down around Port St. Lucie all the way up to Sebastian, which is a pretty extensive area, and that section is known as the Treasure Coast. And the reason it's known as the Treasure Coast is in that area is where the 1715 fleet went down. His daughter recently sold the lease to another individual or a company who are now selling leases or putting out leases for different sections of the bottom as we speak, and are making the money off of it. Like I said,
classic regulatory capture.
Say you go out.
American way.
And you pay $2,500.
Right.
And you go out and you find, you take your boat, your divers, your time, your effort, and you find $100,000 worth of gold.
Right.
Okay? If it's just gold, so basically you come in, you say, hey, I found $100,000 worth of gold. I'm rich. Well, state of Florida gets 20% of that. Okay, so now I've got $80,000
right
worth of gold. Well, unfortunately, the person that you paid the money to work the lease gets 50% of whatever you find.
What?
Wow.
How is
okay.
that at all?
So you pay 20% to Florida. You pay 50% of the 80% that you have.
Right.
So you do all the work, and you wind up with 40% of what you find.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does not seem.
Yeah. So, but there are a lot of people that do it. And
well, yeah, of course. What choice do you have if it's something that you love to do? I mean,
right,
what choice?
Right.
Do you have, you know.
And there are a lot of people that do it for a living. I'm friends with a number of people who are diving right now, and are finding gold. But that always struck me as being wrong.
Yeah.
And when I retired that I was going to start a treasure hunting company, and I really delved into it, I was like, I don't know if you can cuss on this program, but somebody threw the bullshit flag, and I said, no. I'm not going to put my money and my time and my team and, you know, out there to do this. But I had an interest in it, and I've studied it. I studied the fleet. Out of the 11 ships, one survived, 10 sank. Only 6 have been found and identified.
Wow.
That means there's 4 more ships out there that have not been found, and they were all laden with treasure.
What were the other ones, the value of, you know, on the average, the other ones that were discovered?
Well,
are we looking like 100,000, or are we looking like...
Oh, millions? No, you're talking anywhere from, say, 50,000 to the hundreds of thousands.
I see.
And here's the thing. When the ships sank, they ran aground, which means the hurricane blew them towards land, and as it did, it ripped the bottom off of them. And so they moved a significant distance as they were sinking. And so the treasure is not just located in one area where the ship sank. It's strewn across the bottom in what's known as a debris field. So the treasure hunter has to go out and try and find a debris field. And if you find one, you use metal detectors and magnetometers and, you know, side scan sonar to try and find something that gives you an indication that there's probably a wreck there. Then you have to go down and you have to start working the site.
Speaking of the technology of this stuff, this is a statement I've made on this show many times before, and that is, I am both hugely impressed and very disappointed in human technology. You know, part of me is like, oh, I can't believe that we're capable of doing this. And then the other part of me is, oh, I can't believe we're not capable of doing this. You know, it seems to me like we should be able to discover that pretty easily. I mean, but this is my sci-fi sitting on the couch watching TV attitude, I have no real world. You know, so what kind of technology are we looking at here, and what makes it so difficult to find? You would think that something like gold or something, we would have some way of laser picking that up, or,
yeah. Well,
forgive my ignorance, but...
No, not at all. I mean, there are so many people that think, well, why can't you just detect it?
You're right.
Well,
yeah.
If you're on the bottom with an underwater metal detector, you can detect it. But the bottom's pretty darn big. So where do you look? And that's where side scan sonar, which actually can give you a picture of the bottom and what's on it, and using a magnetometer, which comes into play, because what a magnetometer does, you tow it behind your boat, and it measures the magnetic field of the Earth. Okay, now we're getting to some what I call cool science, I think, because...
Yeah.
The magnetic field of the Earth is actually mapped. And there's a chart that you can go online and find that shows you the magnetic reading of any part of the Earth that you want to know. So what you do is you'll pull your magnetometer, knowing what your parameters are for where you're looking, and you look for any aberrations or any blips, if you will. Now, the only thing a magnetometer will do, it will detect ferrous metals. Okay, it won't detect gold, it won't detect silver.
Right.
What's ferrous? Magnetic?
Magnetic, iron-based. So what you look for, what you're towing for, as it's called, mowing the grass, is cannon, anchors, fittings, ship fittings. All of those will show up if there's any kind of a concentration.
Right.
So you try and find that, mark it, GPS, and then that's where you start looking, thinking, okay, if there's cannon there, if there's anchors there, if there's ship fittings that are iron, then that's a good place to say, okay, a ship sank here, now it's time to get busy.
All so right. In the 300 years since the 1715 thing, like, presumably...
other ships have gone down in this area as well, right? Or no?
There are some. I won't say a lot.
Does that mean that the debris field can get confusing and you can constantly be finding wrecks of no value?
Absolutely.
Taste of Reading is back. Dignity Health and Reading West Rotary presents the 14th Annual Taste of Reading 2021, Sunday, September 12th from noon until 4 at the Reading City Hall Sculpture Park. Chefs are preparing their finest foods for you to sample with great wines and micro brews, plus live entertainment on three stages. Get your tickets for food and drink sampling in advance at tasteofreading.com. Sample great food and beverages from local restaurants, wineries, and breweries while listening to the Billies, Lartage, Refugia, Soul Punch, and the Stone Hearts. Reading West Rotary would like to especially thank O2 Employment Services and Cornerstone Community Bank for their underwriting sponsorship to our local restaurants at this year's Taste of Reading. There will be fun for the entire family, so come down to the 14th Annual Taste of Reading, Sunday, September 12th at the Sculpture Park at Reading City Hall. Find a complete list of events and purchase your tickets by visiting us online at tasteofreading.com.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew with this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're sharing Perez Carrillo Trilogy. This gift set is the pinnacle of years tirelessly dedicated to the perfection of cigars. Rating 95, 96, and 98 by Cigar Aficionado, these three cigars have put Ernesto Perez Carrillo at the top of the industry. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet.
Join me and my friends every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. for the California Adventure District radio show, where we talk about all the amazing adventures to be had in our area, from climbing Mount Shasta, hiking the trails, kayaking, overlanding, and camping with Bigfoot. We have it all. California Adventure District. Less people, more adventure. Listen Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. See you then.
Redding Electric Utility, like more than 2,000 utilities across the country, is a nonprofit public power agency owned by the customers. This year, we are celebrating 100 years of serving the city of Redding. October 3rd through the 9th is Public Power Week, and we celebrate the benefits of living in a public power community. These benefits include low rates and local control. Community ownership means your money stays right here in Redding. Publicly owned utilities like REU provide excellent service and work directly for the community.
I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM. 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
You are listening to Hep Aldridge here on Radio Wasteland as we discuss sunken treasure and lost cities. As my body has gotten older, I start to ask myself, why did I collect all these stories if I'm not going to write them down? You know, I mean, and you're definitely out there collecting stories through your existence and hunting.
Well, and yeah, that's what happened. I was able to, and this story took probably 15, 17 years to come together in my mind. And I finally, at one point, once I retired, I said, you know, if I'm ever going to do anything with this, I might as well put it on paper or put it down. And I am not a writer. I don't have an English degree. I've never taken a creative writing class. I didn't know the first thing about writing a book other than you sit down, you start typing. So
that's pretty much all
you
need. Yeah, that's it.
Well, I like to think so, but let me tell you what, that's not the case. it's been an unbelievable learning experience for me, but I've been lucky and I've met some people that have helped me out a little bit. And so I'm feeling pretty good about what's going on and kind of the direction that I'm headed with this. And it's fun. It's a hell of a lot more fun than my dissertation was. Let me tell you.
Yes, I can imagine dissertation, no matter what the topic is, does not sound fun.
No, it was a grueling process, but it was a process.
Right.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier is you were talking about sunken cities and hidden cities. I think a couple of things have happened in the last, say, 5 to 7 years that have really, really changed the world in terms of discovery and archaeology, which leads us to find hidden cities. And one of them is the creation of LIDAR, which is the new laser system that allows you to shoot a laser beam thousands of times over an area from the air and then use an algorithm in a computer program that picks up the reflected laser and then the laser that actually touches the ground and remove the reflected laser, and so you can actually see what the contours of the land are.
And yeah, I rented an office once that was next door to a company that in Northern California flew drones, like military-style drones, over forest land in order to map the terrain for easier firefighting with this stuff.
Absolutely.
And you showed us this crazy, it looked like a Predator drone and everything. I don't know, it was crazy.
Well, they've got them for drones. You can take them. The run-of-the-mill treasure hunter can buy one now. The price has come down so much. And what they do is amazing. And the one section that I know of, and I worked with the Guatemalan government at one point in time on trying to get some filming permits to go down there and document some of the Maya sites down there. But just recently, an aircraft flew over as part of the LIDAR mapping program down there, an area that they knew there were pyramids and the Maya civilization had been there, and they had estimated that there was probably 75 to 100,000 people that had lived there. They flew over and mapped it with LIDAR, and all of a sudden, this huge, huge city complex came up with what are called...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.